Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, a beautiful afternoon for a good game of football now, and it looks as though we have the makings of it.
Barnes has come in. Oh, a fine goal by John Barnes. That's a beauty.
Absolutely emphatic.
And Jay Demerit. Oh, yes. Luther Blissett. That's a spectacular goal.
And Helgeson comes in front. Oh, it's a goal.
And a goal. Sensational. And it's there by Jenkins. Delay. Joel Petro again.
Hello and welcome to the Watford Buzz podcast. My name is Matt Messiano, and with the busy festive schedule looming, we've continued our rotation policy as I'm joined by Tom Burdell whilst Jordan sits this one out. So, Tom, what did you make of the Ipswich fixture?
Yeah, funny old game, right? I think in the I watched it on Sky, I didn't go to the game. I came away feeling fairly positive, despite obviously losing it fairly late in avoidable circumstances. But browsing Twitter and listening to Do Not Scratch Your Eyes post-match space, I think that was largely reflective of the fan base, so certainly those on social media. Only two defeats in 11. I think we've done better out of this little tough run that we knew we were coming into, if more in performances than results, but certainly picked up some results within it as well, than people anticipated. So now we've got a couple of the probably easier games, as it would be perceived on paper, at least in Preston and Blackburn to come. So, you know, if you can get 4 to 6 points there, I think you kind of say that's been a good return from this run. So, yeah, felt fairly good about a defeat, as counterintuitive as that sounds.
No, I agree. Taking the whole period into perspective, we've done better than we expected, and I can only really see positive signs going forward, which is a good thing. I mean, compare this to 12 months ago, and we're in a much better place. One change then from Saturday's draw of Southampton, Jake Livermore back in the side, which kind of confirms something we already knew, is that Val prefers him to Sirota, and I think we all do, actually, to be honest, don't we?
Yeah, I think so at the moment. Sirota did well in a different role, but nominally the kind of deepest midfielder in the three at the start of the season, better than I think most people expected, but I think we're all in agreement now that Livermore is the best player for that position and that role. The funny thing is, and I was thinking this last night, that midfield three has changed completely from the start of the season, where it seemed like Sirota, Lusa and Tom Delibashiru were the three.
Yeah.
You know, and whenever Kayembe wasn't getting much of a look in, I don't think, was he injured possibly at the start of the season? Kone,
yes,
flattered to deceive, and Jake Livermore wasn't really getting a look in either. And now look at them, you say those three have got those spots nailed down to the point that Loser wasn't even on the bench last night. We don't know why. Haven't really seen much of Delibashiru, and Sirota obviously has been injured because that's what he does, but he's very much the kind of backup in his natural position and his kind of newfound position at the base of midfield. And I don't think anyone would have seen that coming at the start of the season. So it's I think there's something in that, in the kind of indicative of how the team has progressed over the season and how things have kind of changed from how we set out.
Indeed. So most people probably pretty happy about that change, but I think a lot of people out there are expecting at least another change, probably for Rajovic, thinking either one of Bio or Reece Healy would get the nod, but Val went with Rajovic again. Was that surprising?
I wasn't surprised it wasn't Healy, which is a double negative. So I never expected Healy to start. I'll be clear on that. I just don't. The fact he scored an equalising goal and, you know, quite a well-taken goal, albeit an element of fortune against Southampton, is almost irrelevant, I think. It's just like a bit of a fly in the ointment for Ismail. He just doesn't fancy him, does he? There's no two way. To give him so few minutes this season is just, you know, says as much. Bio, yeah, I think he's been a little bit hard done by, to be honest. It's not the most inspiring kind of choice between Rajovic and Bio, but I think Rajovic is probably, it's probably at that point where you just go, well, he's not scoring, so a change is as good as a rest, and there's not much more logic to it than that. Bio doesn't look like scoring most of the time, but he does do, as we've said, ad nauseum, the stuff off the ball, the less glamorous stuff, the hold-up play, the stuff that Rajovic simply just doesn't do. And although we saw flashes of it against Hull, I think, yes, there was a much more typical Rajovic performance in that sense, that he didn't do the kind of hold up and so on. So yeah, a little bit surprised, but not surprised, you know, would have probably given Bio the chance myself after the weekend, but not surprised in the slightest that Healy was getting splinters in his backside again, poor chap.
yeah, might have to carry on getting a few more, but he certainly earned a lot of praise in the Southampton game for his 3 minutes of magic, and he earned more game time in the Ipswich fixture, possibly because of that. But let's get to the game in a moment. I just want to talk about no Imran Loser in the squad, which, I guess because he's been a bit of a nomad of recent weeks, I wasn't looking for him in the squad. I guess my eyes go to the first 11 naturally, but yeah, he wasn't there. Can we read anything into that, or is that just maybe he's picked up a little knock, or is it that he's completely out of favour with Val now?
You have to wonder, don't you? You know, if you look at the kind of the first things first, I think they've set such a precedent about publicising disciplinary selection issues, decisions, that you have to assume, had it been that, it would have been said at the time. He's not been spared in the past. I don't think he's likely to be spared now. So presumably it was purely, you know, selection decision based on training, fitness, suitability, whatever it may be. But I think if you look at the bench, you know, even with 9 subs, you've got 2 centre-halves, a couple of wide players in Ince and Martins, a couple of forwards in Bayo and Healy, and a couple of midfielders. So he's competing with Chatfatadze, who it feels like we haven't seen a lot of lately, and Tom Delibashiru, who it also feels like we haven't seen a vast amount of lately, to get on there. Has he done any more than those two in recent times? I think you're hard-pushed. You know, I feel like there's been a bit of an overreaction to how we've done in his absence, but I think you're hard-pushed to say he's justified, he's guaranteed a spot on the bench, and that's what you want, really, isn't it? So it's interesting. You would have pegged him as one of the two or three that were kind of nailed on to be always involved at the start of the season, along with Yasser Asprilla, along with who I would have said in Porteous, because of the kind of lack of options at centre half, and he's just kind of drifted a bit. But what I would say on the flip side of that is, wherever he's at the moment, I would be confident that he will get a chance again, because I never saw this Kayembe renaissance. I never saw someone like Delibashiru playing as much as he has, albeit start of the season. I certainly never saw Backman being kind of dropped for Hamer, who was only ever really signed as a experienced third choice. So, you know, I think Ismail, whatever you think of him, he does seem to pick on merit, and he has utilised his squad fully. No one's been kind of entirely... In fact, the two players that have probably seen the fewest minutes are Pollock and Healy. Apart from that, I think everyone would reasonably say they've been, you know, fairly fully utilised. So I don't think it has to spell the end of the road for him, but there's an onus on him to react in the right way as well.
Yeah, disappointing for Imran loser. I don't know if you've seen the post that he put on his Instagram story. That it was the picture of the gym and a little emoji clown there as
clown
well.
Yeah. Emoji. Yeah, I'd be interested to know the answer. My suspicion is that probably is connected. I suspect as he didn't play yesterday, he would have been in today, whilst those who played were doing less or doing nothing today, as tends to be the case. If that's the case, then, you know, clearly that's the kind of wrong attitude to be displaying publicly. I think it's absolutely fine to have kind of tension or, you know, difficult conversations with your manager, as it is in any walk of life. If you're unhappy about your kind of usage, involvement, career opportunities, whatever it may be, you know, whatever kind of walk of life that is, I think it's fine to have that kind of positive tension, but there are ways and means of going about it. And certainly if that's meant to be kind of a complaint or some kind of show of dissent, then that's not the way to do it. You should be keeping these things in-house. So I suspect we may get an answer based on the team on Saturday up at Preston. I can't imagine he'll be left out twice in a row without it being kind of picked up on and kind of put to Val as a question by the Watford Observer. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see if we can get a little bit more detail on that, possibly even ahead of the game, to be fair.
Yeah, you're right. It's disappointing though, isn't it, that loser, who on his day is probably the best player, you know, ability wise in the squad, but just not able to do anything for Watford in a positive way at the moment. It's disappointing because he could be so helpful.
Oh, absolutely. And look, you know, how much were we pining for him at times last season? He got injured, was it either fairly early on or he was already injured at the start of the season, and he came back and he got injured very quickly. But even in that little run of games, we saw how important he could be. He got, was it away to Blackpool, he scored, I think, against Millwall, possibly he scored or got an assist when we got thrashed. You know, he quickly came in to the team and started contributing. So, you know, we've seen how good he can be at this level. And I see no reason why he can't still be good in this team. I would like to see him get on the ball further forward in the way that Kayembe has and, you know, move the ball quickly and try and kind of make things happen. We saw that in the early weeks of the season. Obviously, the QPR game is the standout in that respect. We've got a goal and assist and he was generally excellent. It's something that he and Ismail need to work out, but I certainly don't feel like the door is closed to anyone in this squad apart from Reece Healy. I'm only being flippant about that, facetious about that. It's going to be interesting though, because conceivably he will be, as I said the other week, he will be knocking on the door for Morocco for AFCON, as will Kayembe. You know, if he doesn't go, then he may find that he's thrust back into the team in Kayembe's place. So you've got to, you know, grasp the chances that are handed to you.
Yeah, and in fairness, I think it's good either way, isn't it, for loser. If he goes, hopefully he gets a chance to get minutes and just enjoy his football again. If he doesn't go and Kayembe does go, then hopefully he can do the same thing. But for Watford, I think probably if I was given the opportunity now, I would say, you know, Kayembe, can you pick up just a tiny niggling injury that keeps you out of AFCON and loser, go off and start enjoying your football again and return to us just feeling better and ready to, you know, contribute. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see. Let's move on then to the game itself. A really bright start, actually. Yasser Asprilla scored the opener pretty quickly, about 10 minutes in, I think. Some good work by Miletarajvic as well. What did you think of his role in the goal? And his overall performance, actually, given that he was given the nod by Val when many kind of expected him to be dropped.
Yeah, I thought he did well for the goal, obviously. Closes down Kladacki, the Ipswich goalkeeper, which is not something he's done a lot of. And I tweeted that and someone said, that's the bare minimum I'd expect, which I think is fair. I think in recent weeks, we've seen more of that from him. But I thought what was interesting on second watching was that it's not just him. It's obviously Asprilla's in the box as well, but Kayembe's in the box. And if you freeze frame it at the moment where Kladacki tries to pass it out to the left-sided centre-back, Cameron Burgess, that is, there are as many Watford players as there are Ipswich players in the penalty area. And I think that's indicative of a kind of increased commitment in the last two or three weeks, certainly since Hull, I felt, where we've tried to press a bit higher up the field and make it harder for teams to play out. So I thought that side of it was good. In terms of Rajovic's overall performance, wasn't his best game again, I don't think. Five touches in the box wasn't a particularly high return. Not many kind of attacking involvements at all. Attempted more aerial duels than anyone, but won less than 50%, which is not a great return. When you're his size, there was one moment I can remember in the first half where he sort of out on the right-hand side, won it back and laid it off to, I think it was to Ryan Andrews at right back. But he just didn't really get involved at all. Missed the chance, didn't he, in the build-up to Asprilla actually scoring, which I kind of feel like he should have done, should have done better with. But no, it wasn't his best game. And I wonder if going away to Preston, which I suspect I expect to be a fairly physical game, we might see Bio reinstated for that one.
Mm. And the goal itself, well taken by Yasser Asprilla. Jordan said on Twitter, you know, he'd started extremely well and he was very tidy, had great pressure, effort, and the precision was there, and he had a better game than he had in the last one.
Yeah, I thought it was good. He's one of those players where if he's not really obviously involved, then he can be easy to overlook, easy to miss. I thought the thing that he did really well and this contributed to us overall was that we looked really dangerous when on the break he would come inside and try and get the ball inside and kind of spread the play, lay it off for one of the runners. He didn't do too often from memory that thing, which can be spectacular and exciting. And when you're in the ground or watching, you love to see it sometimes where he gets the ball in a really tight space, beats a man, and then, you know, instead of maybe driving into space, seems to find somebody else that he can take on. You know, I thought he was more efficient in possession perhaps, in terms of dribbles, only four dribbles, completed half of those, quite efficient with the ball, as I say, got the ball forward. But yeah, I thought he was decent. We probably didn't get him in the game as much as we might have in the second half, and he was obviously hooked sort of after the hour, but he, you know, he's another one who was really nailed down a position in the starting 11, having been staunchly placed on the bench in the early weeks of the season.
Speaking afterwards, Valerian Ismail said, in the first half, the main issue was our enforced errors in the build-up. Just to give the ball away without any big pressure, you need more control. And I think at the end of the first half, we got it. The second half was a game on the front foot from both teams, a typical 50-50 game where the first team with the mistake will be punished. We had chances again to take the lead, and we have to work on being ruthless in front of goal. We created a lot of chances, but the final pass or final shot was not on target. I mean, he said it there, isn't he? That's kind of it.
No, hard to argue with, to be honest with you. I thought we were really sloppy at times in the first half. Number of people that were culpable in that sense. But I thought the moment that really summed it up for me was when Wesley Hoot clipped one out to Ken Semmer. Must have been towards the end of the first half, and it went sailing over his head, I think. And even Ken Semmer got annoyed, and I thought that's kind of indicative of this half, that someone as mild-mannered and generally positive and upbeat and smiley and happy as Ken was evidently getting a bit frustrated at that point. I was just pulled up for my kind of interest, the pass map for us in the first half. And the kind of trend here is that anything going sideways was just about all right, but anything going kind of forwards or backwards, or, you know, chiefly forwards and chiefly kind of balls from the wide areas into the box or kind of into the box from the kind of middle of the park just wasn't connecting. And I think that tells its own story. We were just a little bit ragged at times, which was, in a sense, kind of, you know, when we look better was when we were moving the ball quickly and on the counter attack, which I think is the opposite of what Ismaël has tried to make us this season. You know, he would like us to control the ball and be able to play through the thirds and what have you. So I thought that was interesting. But yeah, it was definitely improved in the second half, but it just felt like time and time again, we gave the ball away and under very little pressure as well at times. That was the other thing.
Yeah. Although having said that, I didn't feel as though we deserved the defeat, to be honest. I thought it should have been a draw on the balance of play. But I don't know, taking your stats into account there, Tom, maybe we did deserve it. I don't know.
I think it's a hard one. As I said right at the top, I felt fairly encouraged coming away in terms of a lot of the stuff we saw. It was, as much as anything, I think it was in terms of the fact that Ipswich are now top, obviously, albeit because Leicester have got a game in hand on them still. But, you know, a very good team that has had a fantastic start to the season came and didn't kind of overawe us or blow us away. You know, we kind of held our own throughout, held in there throughout, you know, didn't look under kind of, it was never a backs to the wall job, you know, at any point. And the goals came about through individual errors. You know, the first goal, Jamal Lewis has to do better with Amari Hutchinson, who we thought was very good for Ipswich, by the way. What a player he looks like. But, you know, comes inside on his left foot. And I saw Lou Orne's tweet about how many times Jamal Lewis let a left-footed player come in on his left-hand side. And, you know, any defender, you show the player onto their weaker foot if you possibly can. But Amari Hutchinson seemed to have a lot of luck down that side. And then it's Ryan Andrews' inability to pick up or, you know, not inability, just dozing, really, not picking up George Hurst for the tap-in. And then the winner, obviously, is a complete clanger by Wesley Hoot, which we'll discuss in a moment. But, you know, they're entirely avoidable goals, is what I'm saying. Obviously, their goal was avoidable as well. I suppose it was three errors for all of the goals. But, you know, I felt like we went kind of blow for blow with them. We had some good opportunities in terms of territory and opportunities to deliver the ball. Didn't really work Kladke that much, I don't think. Obviously, the Rajovic shot, the goal, and then I'm struggling to remember another proper shot. I think Lewis had one, didn't he, which is a bit of a kind of cross-come shot. I don't really think we worked Kladke after that point. But then I don't think they had brilliant chances either. You know, they had chances on paper, but they were kind of half chances. The header that harnessed, you know, pretty tame header straight at Hamer. There was a fairly tame half volley from Connor Chaplin straight at Hamer.
Ken Sema had a big chance to score.
Was that in the second half? Quite late. Kind of on the break, and Tom Ince lays it off for Ken, who whizzes it over. Yeah, I don't think we really worked the goalkeeper, but that's not to say it was a bad performance either. It felt like we were more threatening and there was a clear kind of way that we were creating chances. So I, as I said at the top, I feel fairly confident. I think a draw would have been a fair result. I don't think Ipswich fans would disagree with that on the whole. I know an Ipswich fan, so I should text him and see what he made of it. A draw would have been a fair and decent result in my mind. We were a bit unlucky, but I think that's the difference between us and a genuinely very good team in this division, which they clearly are, that they, you know, took those chances and they were more ruthless. And I think that was something that Val said as well in his analysis of it, wasn't it? That, you know, we have to be more ruthless in front of goal. So, you know, these things are clear. We just need to work on it. And I think that might...
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank.
LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Aid his cause to get another forward in January, perhaps.
Yeah. On Ipswich, Val said something that pricked my ears up a bit. He said something like, we have to do better against the flavour of the month or something like that. Do you remember that?
No, I missed
those,
that.
Those words?
Oh, right, okay.
I'm pretty sure he called Ipswich the flavour of the month, which suggests that maybe he doesn't think that they're going to maintain their run or you know, well, this is maybe a flash in the pan there.
I mean, if he thinks that, they've got 51 points now, and I saw a graphic on Instagram this morning of the best championship start or starts for championship season ever, and it's Ipswich and Leicester are the top two. So I would read, and the graphic kind of detailed how many of them went on to finish as champions or go up, and it was most of them. So you know, I would say that they are more than flavour of the month. It's a slightly odd comment to make, I think, because until this last little run, which, you know, we've talked about quite a lot, I don't think we've had a particularly, you know, I don't know if we've ever played that many flavour of the month teams until recently, to be quite honest with you.
I wonder what flavour they are.
Ipswich, yeah, probably potatoes, tractor boys, or something. Some sort of vegetable that you can, you know, produce.
I'd have said blue raspberry.
Well, it's much more exciting, much more exotic.
You know, one of those made-up flavours that don't really exist.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, okay, great. Let's go back to the Wesley Hoot error then. And we were discussing on the pod the other day, actually, about Wesley Hoot and the interesting player that he is, because we were talking him up and saying that he had a really good game. I can't remember what game it was, but he played very well. And we kind of came to the conclusion that he is a very up and down player. And that's why he's never really made it at the top of the game, because although some of his performances could probably cut it, he has games that would certainly, you know, drop him from the team.
Absolutely.
And this was a example of a poor performance from Wesley Hoot today.
Yeah, definitely. I think that I've, a few things to say on this. First and foremost, if there's a player that could score the goal, if there's a centre back in this club who could score the goal at Hull and then make the error yesterday, you'd say that's Wesley Hoot. I think Portis is capable of making the error, but he's not capable of scoring that goal. I think it's, you know, you can see at times why he was signed. I must admit, I nicked this from the Do Not Scratch Your Eyes pod. They had someone on to preview the Southampton game, who said that, you know, he was actually signed to replace Virgil van Dijk, and that went, probably was counted against him because van Dijk was so good. And clearly they're not even remotely in the same class of player, right? But there's a reason van Dijk is Liverpool and Netherlands captain and Wesley Hoot is Watford captain. But, you know, at times when he does the good things, you can see why he was so highly thought of when he was younger, sort of 5 or 6 years ago. When he does the things he did yesterday to lead to the goal, you can see exactly why he's playing for a mid-table championship team now. But, you know, Southampton, at a time when they were a very good team, for a very good club for recruitment, particularly out of kind of Belgium and Netherlands, spent 17 million, I think it was, on him. So, you know, Val absolved him of any blame quite quickly and said, you know, he won us the game at Hull. And I think that's the right approach to take, because he's had, on the whole, a very good season. You know, his stock had kind of fallen by the end of last season as Porteous's was rising. And this season they've gone in different directions again. So he's been very good, but last night was not a good night for him. I thought he was really one of the major culprits in terms of being poor on the ball. And even a few times he tried, you know, we know if you picture a Wesley Hoop pass, it's usually that kind of big sweeping left to right, the kind of 40, 50-yard ball. He tried to do that a few times with his right foot yesterday and basically cocked them all up. And as I said earlier, it was him to his attempted pass to Ken that went wrong. He completed 39 of 58 passes, but 67% for him completion rate that equates to is pretty low, you know. So he was, yeah, it was definitely not his best day. 8 of 21 long passes complete. Obviously expect that percentage to be lower because there's kind of more risk attached, but again, for him, that's not a great ratio. So it was a difficult day. I don't think I can really put any blame at Kayembe's door either for the pass. I thought obviously we'll never know unless we're in his shoes, but it didn't look like he put too much or too little on it or anything like that. It just looked like a really awkward heavy touch from Wesley Hoop. But I think the good thing about the sort of character he appears to be, and, you know, Anderlecht fans were quick to tell us he was very arrogant when he signed. I think he's got enough of that confidence that he's not going to let it, you know, kind of crush him or anything like that. I'm sure he'll be back to being the Hoop that we know and love at Preston on Saturday, thrashing the ball all over the place, throwing himself into tackles like his life depends on it, and generally playing on the very edge of kind of sanity. So, yeah, he's had a good season. I've not got any great concerns about that.
He's also proving to be quite an effective captain as well whilst Backman is out of the team.
Yeah, I mean, this is interesting, isn't it? People have kind of put two and two together and said, we're good now. We have a different captain. Is it correlation? Is it causation? I think at this point, you have to say it's correlation. And you have to say, as I said with Backman, always try to be fair and reasonable. We don't know how good or bad a captain he is, but I don't think he's a bad choice in the said, you know, kind of experience he's had. He's been capped possibly only a handful of times, but certainly capped by the Netherlands, played for some big clubs, you know, a lot of experience and clearly quality as well. So yeah, good on him. I guess in a sense it's his until Backman comes back in, but at the moment, I don't think Backman's clearly not going to come back in anytime soon. So it's it'll give us an opportunity to kind of work out with a bit more accuracy whether that is something in that or not.
Yeah, he's doing it right, isn't he, Hamer? Not at fault really for either of the two goals, personally.
No, nothing he could do about either of them, really. The first one, he makes a good save. I think there was a little bit of a deflection on it anyway, wasn't there? The Hutchinson shot that comes through. Makes a save, and you really, you know, you're hoping that Jamal Lewis is alert enough there to smash it away before George Hurst nips in, but you know he didn't.
Perhaps could have pushed it further away, but I mean,
yeah, maybe. I think it's one of those where because he has to get down quite quickly and it's quite close to his body, isn't it? So I don't think he's necessarily able to really get the trajectory, but whatever it is in his arm to properly push it away. You know, his arm is kind of under his body. Certainly this is how I remember it, so I'm quite prepared to be proven wrong. As we know, my goalkeeping analysis is not great. So that one, and then the second one, you know, he's obviously sold up the river by who, isn't he? There's nothing he can do. But I didn't think it was his best night in terms of kicking. Certainly in the first half, there are a couple that got wrong or sailed out of play. But generally, I think that side of his game has been pretty good. So, yeah, not his best game, not his worst game. Certainly, you know, don't feel like he harmed the team, which I think at the moment, given where we are in the goalkeeping stakes, is enough to give him a pass for next week or for the weekend.
Let's talk about the fullbacks just quickly then. We did mention them already, but Jamal Lewis, let's bring him up first. Did he have a good game?
Wasn't his best game, I thought. In the first half, I thought between him and Ken Semmer, they had a lot of joy down the right, the Ipswich right, and they pulled off Brandon Williams at halftime and put Harry Clark in there at right back, and that kind of helped nullify that a little bit and shut that down a little bit. But he had a tough time, I thought, up against Amari Hutchinson. I thought Amari Hutchinson was man of the match for Ipswich, certainly. Joint most touches in the box, most shots attempted, most dribbles attempted and completed, most attacking duels attempted and completed, most pressing duels as well attempted, which, you know, don't necessarily associate with a winger. I thought he was a real real thorn in our side. And Lewis, as I mentioned earlier, kind of via hat tip to Luorns, you know, really just sort of let him get inside him onto his stronger foot time and time again. So, no, certainly not his best game. In terms of Ryan Andrews, though, I thought he had a really good game. You know, got forward, was dangerous, wanted to advance the ball, tidy in possession, and didn't let them cause him too many issues overall. I think he just continues to go really from strength to strength. 8 of his 9 defensive actions were successful, 6 interceptions, 1 his only aerial duel, only committed a single foul, and attempted more loose ball duels than anyone, was 2nd for loose ball regains. You know, really, really good stuff from him. And I think he has done exactly what we hoped in Jeremy Ngakia's absence, in that he's just proven that he could and should be that number two for the long run. I guess the only concern is that he does so well that someone comes and puts down an offer that, you know, for an England under 20, is he? England under 20 internationally, certainly only 19, I think.
Yeah, still very young.
Comes in and for a homegrown player, comes in and puts down an offer that we can't afford to say no to. But yeah, he's playing some really good football at the moment.
Absolutely. Next up then, it's a trip to 7th placed Preston, who, despite having a good open to the season, have fallen away a bit. What do we expect from them, Tom?
Yeah, they've really, really struggled of late. Still in a good position, obviously won 3-1 at Huddersfield on Tuesday night, but that was their first win in 5. And the fact they've only won 3 of their last 14 after winning 6 of the first 7. Only 1 win in 6 at home. And I think, you know, at the time that we saw this fixture list coming out, we're thinking, oh, bloody hell. But I would say they're a team that we've got to be going for now. They're not, you know, they don't have a huge amount of the ball, so therefore their kind of defensive numbers are quite high. No one in the division has attempted or won more, been successful with more defensive actions. They're 1st for interceptions, 2nd for aerial duels, 1 and attempted. And I think for that reason, we talked about him, touched him earlier, sorry, Vakumbayo, I think, needs to probably come in for that one for his kind of out of possession work. I think he is a much better all rounder and will do the physical stuff better than Rajovic. They play 3 at the back, so you know there's going to be an onus on us to get bodies in and around to help him as well. Otherwise, he's going to be kind of hopelessly outnumbered, but. You know, despite that, they might not be the kind of prettiest side, and they're fairly direct as well. 3rd for long passes attempted this season. They're up there and they've found a way to win games. So I would be targeting 3 points there.
Nice one. Yeah, it could be a good opportunity to get back onto a run after this one finished. I'm not sure how many it was in the end. Was it 11 games or something without defeats?
Well, 1 defeat in 10, so now 2 in 11.
1 defeat in... Yeah, that's not bad. It's not bad
at all. We'll take it.
Just while I've got you here, Tom, and because you missed the last pod with Jordan, a bit of interesting news dropped the other day from a Whoppers perspective. The technical director has gone. Cristiano Giretta has left to I think he's gone to
somewhere in Cyprus.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, part of a bigger group. And coming in to replace him is Gianluca Nani. He's been in the position before. Was a little bit, I don't know, controversial when he was in the job.
Yeah.
Do you think he should have it back, Tom?
It's always hard to know, isn't it, what these people actually do day to day in the role. You know, we tried to get a bit more clarity on that through the fan forum, and Giretta did an interview with the Watford Observer recently that shone a bit more light on it. But I would certainly say Nani doesn't have kind of the best reputation, does he? Certainly don't think he was particularly popular at West Ham. I don't know how much he had to do with the kind of initial influx of signings. There was a lot of success in that period, but I think also we had a lot of kind of just flops come over as well in the first two or three years while he was here, and since then he's kind of gone out to roles in the Middle East and had a fairly inglorious spell, a very short-lived and inglorious spell at Reading as well. So it very much feels like one that's based on working and having a relationship with Scott Duxbury and the Pozzos previously, or Pozzo previously, which does seem to be how we kind of work. So it's funny to me, and I tweeted this at the time, you know, just never change Watford. We're just constantly turning over these people in these kind of front office roles without explanation, without ever really getting to know them. But I don't put too much store by it because I just, you know, not privileged position enough to know what he does and doesn't do and what he's good and or bad at. So the timing seems a little strange is the only thing I would say as well. Just ahead of January, you kind of feel like that's not ideal timing if we're going to do any business. We don't typically do a huge amount in January, but yeah, given we thought we'd sort of had the bit of turnover in that department with Ben Manga going and the kind of power struggle being won by Giaretta and Ismail, it's a bit of a surprise, certainly.
A friend of mine said on the Giaretta thing, was he really as bad as everyone made him out to be? If I give you a few names here, and we are assuming he had more influence than Ben Manga, because as far as we're aware, Ben Manga only really made two signings in João Ferreira and the loanee from Benfica, whose name escapes me right now. His most recent signings, Mlesarevic, I mean, we know what his faults are, but he's come in and he's scored plenty of goals already. Tom Ince, £50,000 for an experienced championship-level winger. Not bad. Jake Livermore has proved that he still has it about him to be a very good championship level player. Jamal Lewis is starting to earn some fans now. Everyone knows that Chuck Vitazzi has a good ability to be a bit more creative, but perhaps isn't getting the opportunity at the moment. And Vakumbeo on his day isn't that bad either. Was perhaps Giaretta given a bit too much criticism?
Although, as you said, you rightly said, you know, we know the kind of signings now that Manga was responsible for. I always think we have to take these things with a pinch of salt as well and say people are kind of protecting their own backs and looking out for themselves or the people that they owe something to. I've still, you know, I'm not close enough to it. I don't have the kind of sources to say otherwise. I just don't know who I believe anymore in terms of these kind of who's responsible for what broadly, but also, you know, acutely in terms of specific signings. So it's really hard to say. I suspect, though, you're right, that he probably got a harder rep than he deserved because we didn't know who he was and he was kind of seen as this Pozzo man.
Butterfly man.
Yeah, the butterfly man, meddling with things, you know, kind of being sitting near the dugout and all these things. I think, you know, kind of tarred with a certain brush because of his closeness to Pozzo. Nani will probably get a similar kind of, you know, a similar view will be taken of Nani. So it's hard to say. This would be a great opportunity for the club to come out and explain why and all these things. But I'm sure who does what, but I'm sure we won't get it. So I won't waste my breath any further.
Yeah, probably not. We're still waiting for the hierarchy, aren't we?
And that's it. Still waiting for the orc chart. So
yeah. You know. Oh well, we'll keep waiting with bated breath. All right, that will do us for this episode. Thanks very much for joining me, Tom.
My pleasure, mate.
We'll be hopefully podding again after the Preston game when we hopefully get back to winning ways. Please follow us on all the socials. At Watford Pod is the place to follow us on Twitter. And if you haven't given us a rating on iTunes, do that if you can. It would be very lovely to read out what it is you have to say about the pod. All right, then. Thanks very much, guys. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.